So I get all the benefits of water with none of the drowning.
Sit back and enjoy the ride. It's Preservation State with Philip and Christopher. This is episode number 4, September 3rd, 2013.
Should we start a show?
I do what now?
Should we start a show?
A show?
Yeah.
I guess.
Okay.
I guess if your power's going to stay on.
Well, I was working on my... I kind of decided to network out a little bit. And I was working on my reel, some of the things that I've done. And I was in Cinema 4D playing about with a project that I had before.
Tell the listeners what Cinema 4D is, in case they do not know.
Okay. Cinema 4D is one of those applications that is basically what you'd build 3D models in, either architecture, animations, whatever. Almost everything you see ESPN, any of those graphics are built in that.
Okay,
and so
gotcha.
I was trying to take some of the stuff that I had made for, you know, other projects and kind of just spruce them up and really give them some boosty. And all of a sudden, I go and I'm checking my render settings. I'm about to let a render fly, which would have taken probably about, 2 hours.
Sure.
And all of a sudden, my render controls went kind of weird, and the power, boof, was gone. Now, consequently, it was also the exact same time we were putting the girls down for nighttime.
Right.
So, when you don't have power, you don't realize how dark it is everywhere. And they like to listen to their music on their shuffles. And, of course, that wasn't working,
Right.
And so we had a little bit of a slight debacle of getting to bed. But eventually the Sandman came and knocked them out.
As he does.
Well, as he should.
And, yes.
And so I'm sitting outside talking to my mom on the phone, and I'm looking at this light show because it's all lightning but no thunder, which was so bizarre. I mean, these big streaks of lightning. So then I'm thinking to myself, well, there's no way the power company's coming out, because if they do, boom.
Right.
So we had to wait until everything blew over before they could do their thing. But there is good news in all this.
Which is?
I got my SodaStream back up and running. So now I have my I have my fizzy water, but I did give it a little Country Time lemonade.
Ooh, Country Time. Yeah, I gotta get me one of them SodaStreams.
You really do. I mean, after hearing about it, and then Ange was like, yeah, have you heard about this? I was like, yeah, I think we should definitely get one. And
I think I would, my problem, I'm partially a little wary, because I think I'll turn into like a Merlin Mann, John Gruber type, where I'll get addicted to like this amazingly fizzy water and nothing else will satisfy,
Well, see, I have an issue with drinking water anyway. I can't drink water from a glass, because it makes me it makes me feel like I'm drowning.
Okay, all right.
And
this is the psychology hour. Yeah,
yes,
lay it on me.
I can drink it out of a bottle. Like if you hand me, a Nestle bottle Nestle bottle of it, or Deer Park, whatever you want.
Yeah,
I can drink that, no problem. So out of a smaller orifice opening, I can drink it. But glass, no, doesn't work.
And this drowning effect is only with water and only with still water, not with fizzy water?
Exactly.
Wow.
And then, because when you make fizzy water, it's just not the same. It's right. It doesn't have the same heaviness.
That's interesting. I've never thought of that. I've never encountered that. I myself have no problem drinking water.
Yeah,
although
I
prefer it fizzy if I can get it.
Right. You know? See, I used to love, as a kid, I loved club soda.
Oh, yeah, sure.
But you can't drink a bunch of that because it's, real salty, or the sodium level is real high.
Yep.
But as a kid, you don't care.
Sure, sure.
So I get all the benefits of water with none of the drowning.
Show title.
There we go.
I myself am currently enjoying what I call a Pruna Libre, which is like a Cuba Libre, except it's made with Dr. Pepper.
Okay.
So
give me the recipe here.
Dr. Pepper and rum.
That's it.
Cuba Libre is Dr. Pepper and cola. Pruna Libre, since Dr. Pepper is based, flavor is based largely on prunes, it is a Pruna Libre. Never mind.
Well, never mind. It's interesting you bring up the whole rum and Coke type. Well, Dr. Pepper, which is a completely different league, and we could go on and on about that. But
yes,
the which is interesting because I think prunes are somehow used in Dr. Pepper.
Yes, they're one of the 26 flavor ingredients. Isn't that what they say? They have 26
flavors. Something like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well,
is one of them.
That's a good marriage right there. We used to drink. Was it Captain Morgan and Diet Coke? And
sure, classic, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it tastes like sunshine.
I myself have never tasted sunshine, but I will take your word for it.
Well, it's not so much that it tastes like sunshine, but it's like you're drinking the smell, that coconut smell of suntan lotion.
Okay, sure.
So that's where the sunshine comes in.
Gotcha. I can see it. Yes.
Okay. Just So when you want that and you want to try that, and then you drink it, you're gonna say, "Wow, that really does taste like sunshine."
I hear you.
So this has been a pretty bland week, except for
say what.
Well, I mean, really not much has been going on, and then all of a sudden we get hammered today.
Wham, bam. Yeah, I saw the Microsoft news break last night before I went to bed. Yeah. Sure. It's interesting stuff, definitely.
Okay, so, I was listening to Vector today.
Yeah.
And I was trying to get pushing you to listen, but you didn't, and you didn't do your homework, which is fine.
I spent most of the day in a car driving. So.
So you really did have time to listen to a podcast, but you didn't.
No, I wasn't alone.
Well, I understand that too.
Not people who would have easily tolerated a tech podcast.
Right.
but anyway, I'm
right there.
Yeah.
So, but the interesting fact on a cost level is it was less than Skype, but it gave them patents.
What did they spend for Skype? Because this deal I thought was like $5 billion. Is that right?
Yeah.
And what was Skype? It's a good question. I'm gonna look it up. Keep talking.
Okay. So, at the end of the day, now we're starting to see some really big moves. And I'm wondering, are those moves going into the hardware realm, instead of, Nokia was already making the Windows phone, and now
right.
You have Microsoft in a position where they're going to be kind of an Apple.
Well,
potentially. Except they have one fatal flaw.
Windows.
And apps.
Yeah. 8.5 billion for Skype.
Good night.
Wow. Well, we're using it right now.
That's true.
Everybody uses it. It's, you know.
It's crystal clean with no caffeine.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I think you're right. I think apps are currently a big hole for them. And I, you know, patents, I guess, can strengthen their position in ongoing and potential future litigation, I guess. But I just don't know what the hardware capability does for them. I mean, Nokia back in the day was, you know, the new hotness. I can remember one of my first cell phones way back, like 1994, I think I had my first cell phone, somewhere in there. And it was a Nokia, and it was really nice, you know, and they continued that. But now in the new smartphone world, they really don't rate much, do they?
They used to be the symbol of quality. I mean, it was kind of like, a Nokia phone, that's pretty strong.
Yeah.
And then they went away, and I know they had new leadership, which seemed to be, it was an ex-Microsoft guy, Lopp, Michael Lopp.
Okay. Uh-huh.
But it just wasn't seeming to go anywhere. Now, where I see this being potentially interesting is if Microsoft owns that, then that means they could conceivably, they own the hardware, they can lower the price. You know, they could take a loss.
Yeah. Well, so that puts them, I think that sets them up in a position to really be fighting against Android, that sort of approach. Yes?
I would think so.
Not so much against Apple.
Well, but see, Android doesn't make their own phones, except for the Nexus, which I've never seen anybody have.
Right. Well, they own Motorola now, right? Or at least the Motorola mobile communications.
What?
So now, wait a minute. Motorola makes is technically Google, in a way, isn't it?
Didn't Apple and Google go in together on that for essential patents? There was somebody that Google and Apple kind of teamed up. Oh no, it was Microsoft and Apple that teamed up against Google.
And mm-hmm. But Apple bought, Google spent $2.3 billion on Motorola Mobility, it was called, was the name of the division. And that's basically all their cell phone stuff.
Well, I mean, I guess if you're going to compete against them, I'm sorry.
That figure's incorrect. Not 2.3, but 12.5 billion. Sorry.
Yikes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know. I guess we'll see. I mean, I don't think we're going to see anything soon. Maybe a year from now, we'll be saying something totally different.
Well, it's a really interesting step when you basically don't have a CEO. You know, where did this decision come from? Was this direct from the board? Is this from new leadership that we don't know about yet? You know, where is this coming from exactly? It was obviously in the works for some time. You don't just do this over a weekend, you know.
Little weekend capture.
I wouldn't think, but, you know, so who's orchestrating this? Was this sort of, you know, Ballmer's last little project on his way out kind of thing, or what?
Or maybe it was a project that he didn't agree with, and so Ballmer knew for some time that he was going to get ousted.
Because of his opposition to this, possibly.
Maybe.
You know, who knows? Pure speculation, but it's just interesting timing, you know?
Yes. And then Dalrymple punches out with September 10th.
Boom.
And look, I've looked at that picture a bunch of times. I've read everything that they have to say in the show notes here.
Yeah.
I started to even like think about, well, what if I inverted the color, or if I could look at it like somebody who was colorblind? And I just, I don't see it.
I think a lot of it is people, you know, fitting the invite to their expectations, you know, and you can see a lot in something if you want to, you know, but you know, some of it I think is valid, you know. Sure. There's colors there. Those colors look like the kinds of colors we would probably get a color iPhone in, you know,
yep,
kind of thing. So it makes sense. Over at Macworld, they were trying to, create this, what I thought was kind of funny. They were trying to put this 5S, you know, buried in the layout of the dots. And I thought that was sort of humorous. That's a bit of a reach.
I mean, because there's really, and I was even looking at it from different angles, and I just, they just seem so randomly laid out.
Mm-hmm.
And yet some of them go over each other, and then you have a lot of them that are staying really far away from each other. Like sure. There's that magenta one at the top.
Yeah.
That is so out of place.
What I'm sort of intrigued by are the ones that are just an outline, that are white, or I guess really kind of transparent on the inside. Those intrigue me. What are those
about? Yeah. Well, the unofficial Apple weblog has it as the representations of loss. Steve Jobs, Scott Forstall, John Browett, and Bob Mansfield.
Okay. All right. All right.
But Bob didn't leave.
No, I think that Bob, I mean, who knows what's going to happen, but I think Bob Mansfield is sort of integral for Apple getting things done, you know?
So they need him in the spice mines.
I think so. I think he's working on, I think he's kind of doing the things he does best in a sort of different role, you know?
I'll bet you he's down in Texas with the Mac Pros.
That would make sense.
Yeah. That I'd go with.
Overseeing the ramp up on that.
I don't think they need a phone that's as green as that, though. It's not going to be. It's going to be that the green that's beside the Apple. By the bite.
Oh, I got you. Sure, the lime green,
mm-hmm.
sort of.
Mm-hmm. Has to be. And then there's one gray one right at the top that's obscured by the Apple.
There is, yes. Is that gray or is it very light blue? It's hard to tell for sure.
Yeah, I don't know.
It might just be looking blue because of all the blue around it. Yeah.
I don't know. This is just too weird.
Well, you know, it won't be long, and we'll know. 7 days.
Yep.
And it's fun to speculate, but I think, you know, I think this kind of speculation is just, you know, mere amusement. I really don't think you can probably tell a whole lot from what's on the invite, you know?
Yeah. I still think there's going to be some sort of Apple TV announcement. Not the TV, but I think they're going to do at the minimum a refresh, but something's coming down the pipeline. Maybe it's going to be new services or new channels, but I just have that feeling.
Hey, I'm all for that. I use and love my Apple TV. It's with the iPad and the Apple TV, you know, that makes me feel like I'm living in the future, you know.
It is nice. I mean, who knew that a little box could do it? And it's not that it does so much. It just does it really well.
Yep. Yeah. Well, for me, one of the really amazing and wonderful thing that I use constantly is AirPlay. I'm always beaming things over to the big TV, you know?
Yep. Well, and that's going to, with Mavericks, I'm really looking forward to taking it and making that my other screen if I want to, like my second screen.
Right.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty impressive. It's very nice. What else are we anticipating there? Announcement.
I don't...
iPads, no. That's sort of been made clear.
Well, unless they show a pad with 7 on it, which, I mean, I know exists, but no one's really seen it except for those who have the beta.
Right, right. And still waiting to see, you know, still beta 6 for iOS 7. You know, waiting to see if we get a beta 7 or if we go right to Gold Master.
Well, they have to go Gold Master at this point, don't they?
Well, I would think. You know, it'll be interesting to see. It seems like the iPad version is lagging a little bit as opposed to the iPhone iPod Touch version. So I wonder if we'll get one before the other, or I we'll see. Who knows?
Because I'm trying to think. Would they just not release or say it'll be ready, not today, but at the end of the month?
Well, the birdies that I've heard talking have been saying a 20th for the release of the new phone. So, you know, that's another 10 days after the event. So that would have to, you know, I would assume iOS 7 would have to be out at that point.
Yeah. And I saw with iOS 7, apparently they're doing some sort of getting to know 7, especially in the very, when you install it, there's going to be some tutorial.
Ah, uh-huh.
So I've heard, or so it's been confirmed and unconfirmed.
I have not seen anything like that.
Yeah, I think it's going to be, you know, similar to when you do another install, but it might show, well, this is this, you know, trying to get people kind of, you know, like my dad, who's going to freak out.
Right, because things like Spotlight, you know, on the iPad or the iPhone, it's, you know, right now you can swipe to the right to get to that quote unquote hidden search screen or what, double tap the home button? No. What's the other way to get there?
Swipe up?
Just single tap the home button. Yeah, on iOS 7, and I can say this because it was demonstrated, you swipe down, just not from the top of the screen, or you'll activate, not control center, that's the one from the bottom. What is that called again?
Control center? Control center.
Is that control center? No, control center is the one from the bottom on iOS 7. From the top, it's the the panel with all your reminders and notifications.
I guess. Oh, yeah.
So you get that if you swipe from all the way from the top of the screen, but if you swipe down from slightly below there, you get search. And now you can search from any springboard screen. You know, it's not restricted to its own screen.
Gotcha.
You know, but that's something that if it's not told to a person who's familiar with iOS 6, it's not immediately clear where to find that.
Yep.
So those sorts of things.
Ooh, I don't know. It's still kind of scary.
Well, it'll be fun when we do our show next week.
Yes.
It'll be interesting to talk about what we see, you know?
Right, right. I hope maybe even we'll have downloaded it by then.
Maybe. Please. Well, you know, and I've already been using it, and if it's released, you know, if they release it, then we'll be able to talk about it in full, and that'll be interesting.
Yeah, for sure. Speaking of stuff going on, for you especially, and I looked at it, you know, every now and again, but iPhonography.com is shutting its doors.
Yep. Yep.
That's kind of sad.
It is too bad. Glenn Evans is the guy who ran it. And I can't remember how long he's been at it exactly, but, you know, a good number of years now. And, yeah, he's done. So it's a definite loss to the iPhone photography community. You know, he did a lot of interesting reviews, and he was pretty clear about his beliefs and what he liked and what he didn't like. So it was interesting.
Well, 2008. So, I mean, we're talking the year after the phone came out.
Right.
He set up shop.
Yep.
Well, and there it is. You know, with less and less worthwhile apps appearing and just reinvented ones, the newsworthiness got less and less.
Yep. Yep.
And that is true. I mean, you know, for every, you know, really featured photography app, within a week or two, you get saturated with really the identical thing.
Right. Yeah, you know, there's definitely, you know, you get, I think, saturation plateaus, you know, because we'll get, you'll sort of get a saturation of different kinds of photography apps, you know, et cetera, and then you'll get a new iPhone or with new capabilities or new iOS with new capabilities, and it opens up some new possibilities, and you see some new things start to happen again, you know?
The one thing I really did like about the site, more than just apps, was kind of the extra little doflickies and cool stands and things to, you know, to hold your phone as a camera. That's what I really liked. I remember seeing...
Every photographer loves accessories.
That's oh, yeah. right. And they had... it was the first time I had seen the... it wasn't the Owl clip. I'm thinking like the Owly. You put your phone into it, and it gave you a wide angle, and it gave you a shotgun mic.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
And I was just... flabbergasted at it. I wish I could remember exactly what it was called, but I just thought, wow, that is awesome. You just get a little bit wider angle, and you get a far better microphone.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of interesting accessories out, you know, and we'll talk about one here in a couple minutes, you know. But I would have really liked to have seen Glenn sort of transition iPhonography over to more of a photo centric and photographer centric site, maybe, you know, start really focusing on the output, you know, and then mix the accessories in there. I think that would have been interesting, you know.
It would have been.
Hey, he's got to do what he's got to do, you know.
Yeah,
it'll be interesting to see if he sells iPhonography.com, and if so, you know, what ends up there or what have you.
Yep, and accessories is yet another thing that came out today.
Yeah.
This thing looks really cool.
You think? I don't know.
I think the price is a little steep.
Well, I think the form factor for me is just problematic. Well, I just don't know how to use this exactly.
Are you going to put that in your... Okay, well, first of all, what we're talking about. Sony has a CyberShot lens or lenses that are iPhone compatible that are starting at $250. Where was it? It was on the Apple Insider.
Yeah.
And it's got a Bluetooth camera lens accessories compatible with Apple's iPhone. And I'm not exactly sure how it works.
Well, it looks like, as I'm sort of looking at it here, it looks like, you know, basically it's basically a camera in the shape of a lens. You know, it has no viewfinder or anything or LCD or anything like that, but it has onboard memory. Let's see, it looks like 64 gigs of onboard storage, so you can actually use it as a standalone device, and then it connects via Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
To either Android or iOS devices.
Now, 64 gigs, that's pretty strong. Considering
I mean,
I've got a gig of space on my phone as it is.
Right.
And it kind of reminds me of like a dip can. So maybe you could put it in your pocket.
Well, from the pictures that I see here, it looks a little bit big to fit in your pocket. You know, you might get some interesting looks if you carry it around in your pocket. But, you know, I see two example pictures of people using it. And one is a couple, and she's holding a phone in order to, I guess, to see the framing of what they're doing. And he's holding the lens out in front of them, taking a selfie, you know. And it just, to me, it's just so impractical to really do that. I mean, I don't know, you know.
If I was a spy, I'd be all over it.
Well, it'd have to be a lot smaller then.
Well, true.
And the other way they want you to use it is they want you to put your phone into a case, and then the lens camera thing snaps or connects in somehow to that, the back of that case.
Mm-hmm.
And then you sort of use it as a single piece camera. And my issue there is, okay, now I've got this case I've got to have on my phone. Which means, you know, what happens when I want to use my Oloclip or my Glyph or my, you know, what have you, you know?
Yeah.
It becomes really problematic to me. I don't know. It's sort of interesting, but it's not something that really fits into the way I want to shoot, personally.
It does have a 1-inch sensor, 20 megapixel images with Carl Zeiss glass.
Yeah, so you know, Sony does some nice glass. They got the Carl Zeiss glass in a lot of their stuff, and it's good. Yeah, it looks like they have 20 megapixels on the one, and 18 megapixels on the other. Yeah, it certainly could be interesting to play around with, but once you start throwing 20 megapixel images at the phone, I want a little more options is in terms of what kind of glass I'm going to use, you know, just nice glass in there, but you know, where's my fixed 50 millimeter, which is my favorite lens, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It definitely has some intriguing capabilities of just the idea of it.
Mm-hmm.
But haven't we gotten away from that form factor, like where it's connected and you've got essentially a camera, you know, lens and box? I could see where that'd be, you know, it's like, wait a minute, why do I really want that?
Yeah. I don't know that. It doesn't really say here. I wonder if connecting to a phone and having an app on that device allows them to have more control over the output, you know, sort of like iOS apps do, you know, camera apps that let you do interesting things, you know.
But
I suppose those will probably come.
Well, now you bring up an interesting point about power. Because I'm thinking, if you have to have Wi-Fi on to control it,
yep.
And I don't know what the latency would be. Obviously, it might not be too bad, but it's got to have some. Something. And then do all the pictures stay right on that lens? Or are you transferring them over? Because now if you're transferring over a 20 megapixel image, I don't know, what does that equate to in an actual image? 20 megs?
That's a good question. I don't know the conversion off the top of my head, but it's not a small image. Yeah. 20 megapixels is going to be pretty good size. Probably not 20 megs, but, you know, up there.
Well,
it depends. But, you know, they're probably JPEGs.
They have to be.
I don't see any indication that it shoots in RAW.
No, you know that's not going to happen.
Well, you know, if I'm gonna spend the time to shoot 20 megapixel images with Carl Zeiss glass, it would be kind of nice if I could shoot it in RAW. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Whoa. Both models include built-in stereo microphones, integrated mono speaker.
Well,
that starts to make me wonder now.
But, of course, we don't get any specifics about the video capabilities.
Yeah. But that's definitely interesting.
Oh, certainly.
Because that's where that 64 gigs would come in handy.
Right.
I don't know. We'll see.
I think it's intriguing. I think it's intriguing.
Yeah. Could be good. Should we talk about my conspiracy?
Which one?
That Algotrim, the Swedish company.
Uh-oh. The Swedes are always in on something.
You know, ATP was talking about this. It was the Three Phones Back episode. And Syracuse was discussing, you know, pictures and where they're going. And I haven't done the math and haven't done the due diligence to figure this one out. But I wonder, the image that you have on your phone and the image that you get when it goes up to iCloud and then, say, comes back down to iPhoto.
Yeah.
Are they the same?
That's a good question.
Well, because it brings up the point when I'm looking at... I know that PhotoStream takes up space on your phone or on your iPad.
A lot, in my case, anyway.
Right. Yes. And you wouldn't normally think that because you think, oh, it's in the cloud, but how are you seeing those thumbnails? So I thought, okay, well, maybe they're just showing you the thumbnails, but when you touch them, they're immediately popping up.
Yeah, the full-size image is downloaded to each device.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Now, I'm curious if this company, because, see, Dalrymple was also talking about compression of audio and video, and I don't think that this company deals in that. I think it's more of this, more the still image and stuff with iCloud, even iWork, and compressing that kind of data rather than video and audio. I just don't, you know, I don't see them playing that game because you can't really bring it down any further. You can make it faster or, you know, what apparently H.265 is going to bring to the table. But I don't see that as that. I see it as something to where PhotoStream and iWork are going to get faster. And that's where they're using this company. Hmm. This is much my thought, that they're more bits than they are compression of video and audio. I think that's, you know, it's got to be something with the cloud.
Interesting.
I mean, that's just my thought.
Algotrim. It says here, Algotrim develops advanced solutions for mobile devices within the fields of data compression, mobile imaging, video, and computer graphics. These solutions are designed to excel in terms of high performance and small memory requirements, making them ideal for mobile devices. Many solutions offered by Algotrim are codecs that are the fastest on the market. For example, the lossless codec codec for general data compression and imaging codecs.
See? Hmm.
Interesting.
Now, can you rent a movie on an iDevice? I don't think you can.
I don't. Last time I tried, you could only buy, but that may have changed since the last time I tried. I wouldn't quote me on that.
Okay. Because I was just thinking, you know, what if Apple doesn't really necessarily get out of the industry standard, which is the 264, and that kind of realm, because if they it would be like the way Google did with that V6 video encoding, that V6 codec. I don't see them going proprietary, but if they could get out from under the thumb of Moving Pictures Group, that could be a real watershed moment. Because, you know, in theory, the way that that license work, the license of MPEG, or, you know, H.264 and all the codecs that they've developed, is I can't remember how the license states it, but it's similar to they own everything that is made with it. So you and I, as we make things and do things with it, they could pull the switch and say, okay, if you're using it, you're going to pay for it. You know, they've been kind of giving it away for free, but they could flip the switch and say, okay, everybody owes.
Right.
If they were working on a completely different scheme, I need to look that up now because
it seems to me that, you know, with the web being, you know, the platform of the future as it is in its own way, you know, you really got to stick with some standards. You know, I could see them going off with some proprietary compression in things like iCloud and those sorts of things, but you got to be careful with, you know, what you're doing on the end product, you know, and compatibility.
Yeah. Okay. It's the MPEG LA, the standard for standards. Yeah. We'll put that link in there. But, and see, you can request a license. And again, I don't know. VC1 is the one that I think Google was trying to adopt. But they own it all.
Right, right. Well, you know, Google always cries open, 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 but really, in a lot of ways, Apple's the one that pushes the open technologies more.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the first time I had ever heard of 264 was when Steve Jobs was talking about it, and then,
right,
then it became, you know, commonplace.
Yep. Yep. Well, you know, and everybody screamed and hollered, "Don't take your flash! Oh, flash! You know, we need flash." And I don't use flash on my desktop machine, and obviously I don't use it on my iDevices because it doesn't exist. But I don't miss it a bit.
Nope.
Have no problems.
Not at all. I couldn't. Well, see that. And the interesting thing is 265 is that it's supposedly able to carry in a lighter bandwidth way a 4K image.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
But so far, that's all theoretical.
Right. Yeah. Spark up your red. Get out there.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But being able to see that red image on your cable provider in a decent way.
Right. Well, you know, one of these days Apple's going to spring on us a retina cinema display, right? Whoa.
Wow, I couldn't even imagine.
That's it seems be, like you would. It's you a would, lot of pixels. Wow.
That is. You. I mean, but you'd be sitting so far back, I don't even know if you'd really notice it. Maybe you would.
I just, you know, I think you pack that many pixels into a 27-inch screen, it's just going to look like butter, you know? Ugh.
Well, and think how big you can go.
Yeah.
And yep. still have, you know, a reasonable resolution. Mm-hmm. Well, more than reasonable.
Yep. That's going to be one expensive piece of glass.
I could. Oh, yeah. They'd have to rethink everything. But now if you could project that, maybe it wouldn't be as expensive.
Yeah, projection. You know, projection that's good enough for me to use to design and stuff and for you to do, you know, real video work, et cetera. That's a long ways off, you know?
I think so. Though I did see something very interesting in one of my government TV magazines. A bulbless...
Government TV, huh?
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah.
I just yes. that intrigues me right there. There's a story yes. there somewhere, but go on.
Well, actually, it's government technology, but it's really video.
Brought to you by DARPA, right?
That's right. They had bulbless projectors. They use laser and, I don't know, magic. And somehow... They last like 10,000 hours.
Wow. Laser and magic. I've been hoping for something with lasers and magic for a long time.
I can't remember. Oh, it's LED. It's LED magic.
Well, that's... Yeah, I'm totally disappointed.
Right. Well, I'm sorry.
I wanted sharks with freaking lasers on their heads, right?
Well, yeah. There's magic in the whole laser and the LED thing. So in between those two... vector points.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's got to be, right?
Excuse me.
So, I'll go ahead and tell a story, and then you can amend them onto it, because you don't work in the same world that I work in.
Not for many years, no.
But I think I sent you a whisper last week because I couldn't believe what I was involved in. Literally a 2-hour meeting, and this is just a regular old staff meeting for 2 hours, and I felt as if it ate. You know, so much of my day that by the time we got out, which was at 3:00, we got in there at 1:00, like most of my day was kind of, you know, gone. I had, you know, barely enough time to finish what I was working on.
Yeah.
And I just don't understand how meetings go on. And nothing, literally nothing was really... set in stone. No goals were made. It was just simply, oh, we're going to talk about this, but we won't really want to make a decision about it. And when we try to make a decision, there's always, well, we'll get back to that next time. Right. So this list just keeps getting longer and longer, but it never really gets cinched up. You know, the only thing that cinches it up is time, because, oh, we ran out of time on that one. All right, dump it.
Right. Right. Or, oh, this one's due tomorrow. Quick, just slap it together.
Oh. I mean, that's you know, part of the world that I'm living in right now, which is, all right, put a head and tail on it and be done with it.
Right.
And for me, that just, it just kills me. Especially, you know, meetings that we record, fine. That's fine. Head and tail, done. Because, I mean, you're not going to do color grading on a meeting.
Right.
But when it's something that you kind of really want it to look good, it's like, I can't just put a head and a tail on it. You know, I got to look at, you know, the three cameras that we used, and I got to match them up.
Right.
It's the way I want to do things.
Right. You could argue that it's the proper way.
You could argue that.
Yes.
But I don't know if the taxpayers want me to do that.
Well, I don't, you know, I don't want to put too fine a point on it, or maybe I do, but I mean, isn't what you're talking about really just a lack of leadership?
I think so. I mean, I guess the thing that I often ask myself, and it's like, what is it that I want? You know, and I want somebody to tell me, this is what we need, and this is when we need it done.
Right.
And if you told me those two things, so many more things could be accomplished. Because let's say I didn't make that deadline. Well, that'd be on me. And I could say to myself, well, you know, I didn't put the hours in. I didn't meet expectations.
Right.
But, well, I mean, there's really no causality. If I spend an extra week on it, no one, you know, there's no real reprimand to it.
Right.
So what's the incentive?
Yeah. Well, you know, and I assume that you constantly get put in the position where you're unable to do your best work just because of the inefficiency in scheduling things and planning things out.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be, I mean, the way it's been recently, I haven't been working as many late nights as I used to. But, you know, if you're working, you know, it used to be where I would be, you know, 2-3 days, I'd be at, you know, a 24 hour already. Like I would be, because I would have worked 12 hours probably 2 days in a row.
Right.
Now, so that's kind of changed for me, but still, it's like, And you're not going to get my best work after, you know, hour 24. I mean, I'm shredded.
Yeah, sure. Of course.
So I'd get home on a Friday and I'd be down for the count. Like when, you know, 10 years ago, I'd be, woo, yeah. Friday, let's get down. Now I'm down.
Yeah, I hear that.
And a lot of it is like, you know, sometimes decision makers, it's weird. Like we were actually in a meeting today and it was a lot less than 2 hours. It was almost an hour.
Mm-hmm.
But we were talking about social media and using YouTube a little bit more effectively. And it always becomes this, well, let's split the things that we do into different channels. And, you know, I was really biting my tongue because I said, if we divide up the things that we do into different channels, then we're not giving the citizens what I said, a fire hose, where they can pick off what they want and leave the rest. Instead, right. Now you're destroying and disintegrating, disseminating all these groups. And so there's no common, you know, flagship that it's under. It all becomes, you know, different departments and every department wanting their own channel. And that's just,
right.
That's.
And somebody from each of these departments has to manage that channel, or.
You would think. because ultimately what would happen is we would be in control of said channels. And so then you got to upload to different pieces of the equation.
Right.
And I'm trying to figure out a system to kind of set in some workflows and some Hazel rules and a little bit of Apple script so that all you got to do is dump a file in. It's going to – I only have 21 characters to deal with. So like I'm looking at maybe the last three characters are going to mean one thing. So it's going to go to a different – you know, it's going to be tagged a little differently. So I'm trying to look at the end game first and work my way back.
Right.
But the resistance I get is it keeps, well, where are we doing now and moving forward? And I said, but we got to have a goal in mind of what we want. And if it's going to be multiple channels, which I'm thinking that that's not going to happen, though there was no definitive decision made.
Right.
Again.
Well, now, you know, what I've always in the past found effective, and I wonder if this is done at all at your work, but, you know, when you have a project like this, you know, like, okay, we have to set up all these YouTube channels or one YouTube channel and figure out how to manage it, et cetera, tagging, all those things. Who owns that? Who can turn around and say, yep, that's my project?
Oh, wow. Now you're reaching to a point that I've always kind of been sorely hurt on. For whatever reason, you know, where I work, we don't put credits on the back end. It is a generic credit, media services.
Right.
So you will never, you if you were to look up stuff that I've done, you wouldn't know it unless I put it up myself and you could say, oh, okay, he must have done this.
Sure.
But you'll never see my name on the back end of any of the stuff.
Right. But even beyond that, you know, not even so much visible credit, you know, just in terms of project structure and hierarchy within the office, you know, when you go into this meeting about YouTube, you know, who, you know, in my mind, there should be one person who that this is sort of their project and everyone else is giving input, et cetera. But there's one person who should be the point, who should be coming to the meeting with different, you know, a packet of materials or a PDF that's emailed to everybody beforehand or what have you that has, you know, some information about some of the different approaches and the pros and the cons and that sort of thing and can direct the meeting and lead you towards a goal, you know?
You know, see... This makes me wonder, because I've never worked in the business sector and the private sector.
Yep.
And so this might be what we're touching on is how government works or doesn't work. Because, I mean, is right. It different for you? Like, think about when you were doing, like, you know, office business guy.
Right. Yeah. You know, well, my last real experiences with working, you know, collaboratively in an office environment would be advertising agencies.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they were very collaborative environments in a creative sense. But, you know, at the same time, every little project or big project or whatever, somebody owned that. And it was their responsibility to, you know, get the information and the viewpoints from other people that they needed to make the right decisions and manage that project and see it through. You know, everything was owned by someone, and obviously not all owned by the quote unquote boss. That would be impossible. You know, unworkable. But I just that seems integral to me is to have ownership of these projects by someone who can guide it, you know, to fruition.
Yeah, and that makes total sense to me. It's like, okay, you don't have, you know, one quarterback, but you have a quarterback per project. So
right.
It can
right.
Yeah.
And then you have you're the boss, the quote unquote boss is the coach, for instance, you know.
Right.
What I mean. And he's gonna manage these quarterbacks and the players, et cetera, but you can't the boss can't be the quarterback of every little project. Yeah, that's
yeah,
pointless.
See, my boss he's very micromanagement on everything. So right. Everything eventually loops. So I may make a decision that in most cases you're paying me to make that decision, but now you're coming back and second guessing it or what I call death by committee.
Sure. Yep.
You know, when I was working on the police cars, you know, now I wasn't necessarily saying, okay, this is the idea, this is the design, boom, that's it, it's done. I mean, there had to be some refinements because, you know, there just have to be. But when it starts to take so long and delayed because everyone wants to throw their little piece in, then the overall effectiveness and, well, for me, the design starts to, you know, break down.
Sure. Yeah. Classic, you know.
Yeah. That was a heartbreaker. I mean, I'm still proud of them that I did it, but, you know, with all that lag and foot dragging, it took all the kind of pride and kind of sucked it away.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's where I'm kind of at right now, especially is like, you know, I really want to have pride in the work that I'm doing and do it to a level that really kind of says, you know what? I bet you Mo's did that. And to have that mark on it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But that's probably, you know, the art guy in me to be able to sign something and say, that's mine. And not feel bad about it and want to put my name on it.
Sure. Yeah. Well, of course. I mean, we all want that, you know? Definitely. Definitely. We all want to be like a Paul Rand. You know, he's the guy who designed the Next logo, you know?
Okay. Gotcha,
and the,
gotcha,
you know,
gotcha.
And paraphrasing, but the gist of the story is, you know, Steve Jobs, you know, was talking to him about hiring him for the job, and Paul Rand said, sure, you know, I'll design your logo for you. You know, this is how much it costs, you know, I'll be back, kind of thing. And he didn't present Steve with options, you know, and all that. He presented Steve with the Next logo, you know. That was it.
Wow. That took some absolute guts.
Well, you know, that's somebody at the top of their game, you know.
Yep. Yeah. You asked me, I'm going to do it, right. And you're going to like it.
Right. You're going to pay me an exorbitant amount of money because you know that I will solve your problem, and that the solution I bring you will be the right solution, you know?
It's what you're paying me for.
Right.
It's just tough. And again, I think it's and this starts to make me all jaded on government to begin with. It's like, oh my gosh, I cannot believe the amount of money that's being dedicated to me, and you're really not letting me rip.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's and conversely, you know, if I'm a taxpayer, I'm thinking to myself, boy, I want to get the most I can out of my money.
Right. Well, I think also, and I, you know, this is speculation from the outside, but it would seem to me that, you know, there's sort of a basic conflict of viewpoints going on, whereas you see what you're doing as, you know, part of your art and craft, you know, when you deal with video and you're doing editing and all those things, this is something you take pride in and it's part of your craft. And perhaps the government just, you know, sees it as a pipe, you know?
I think so. And I saw it as an ends to a means and a way to, you know, get money for the craft. Cause I knew, like, look, I'm going to be honest with myself. You know, and I had talked to my wife, but I was like, you know, I can't do Hollywood. I can't do that kind of stuff because we got a family. I can't, you know, I can't have money 1 month on a project and then no money for 3 months. You know, hopefully,
right?
You know, when you're good, you know, you always have jobs coming. But, you know, it was that risk averseness.
Hey, chasing clients. I did it for years. Chasing clients is not fun.
Yeah. And especially when with the movie industry being in such a weird upheaval right now, it's like to place your bets is crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't know, you know, and especially shooting in the U.S. is so expensive, except for Louisiana. Well, and a few others. I mean, North Carolina is doing its own thing, too. But, you know, because, well, Iron Man 3 was just shot here.
Oh, really?
In Wilmington. I think some of the final scenes with, you know, all the Iron Men,
mm-hmm.
I think that was all in Wilmington.
Hmm.
But neither here nor there. But, you know, it's just a... one of those situations.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and, you know, and the opposite side of that is, you know, there's you know, if you're not going to risk anything, how are you going to get ahead, you know?
Exactly.
And the truth is somewhere in between those two, you know?
Yep. So, you know, I was talking with my mom about it, and she said, you know, really every year you should be interviewing just to brush the resume up and, you know, interview as if you don't need the job.
Right.
And then chances are you get the job.
Right.
Or it gives you a decision to say, that's not for me. Yeah. So we'll see.
When you don't need the job, it takes off a lot of pressure. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And right now, I don't need it. But it's something to think about.
Right.
So my networking whiskers have begun just vibrating a little bit, tapping the ground, sniffing for water.
A tasty morsel. Yes. Yes. Yeah, well, you know, meetings.
and this is what happens when you have meetings like that, because then that's what starts to cultivate in your head.
Yeah.
Why am I in this 2-hour meeting? And if it was 15 minutes, I wouldn't have had time to think about it.
Right. Right. Well, and that's, you know, that's one of the real problems is, you know, as you talked about earlier, is that meeting, it's a 2-hour meeting, which really means it's like 2.5 hours, you know, with all the rigmarole. And, you know, if anything is accomplished, what was accomplished could have been accomplished in 20 minutes if people had been focused and there had been someone owning the project, et cetera, et cetera.
You know? Right. No jabber. Don't ask my opinion if you're not going to use it. You know, that's the one thing. It's like when opinion is asked, especially to a group, you basically let the floodgates open wide.
Right.
And so you're going to get every different angle, and then basically it's like throwing a deck of cards out.
Right.
Now, I can't play a game because I got to clean this up.
Right, and that's where the ownership comes in, because if somebody actually owns that project, then sure, everybody else can take that deck of cards, all of those ideas and suggestions, and fling them all over the table, and then the person who owns that project, you know, part of their job is to make some stacks out of those cards, you know, organize them somehow, and move that discussion forward, you know?
Yep.
And it's not always easy, but, you know, if somebody has ownership, that's sort of the first step, I think.
See, but – and this comes back to consequences. This is our follow-up.
Right.
Consequences.
Consequences.
Don't do your if you don't do your job properly, you're going to get fired, or you're at least going to get reprimanded in a harsh way.
I don't know. It's government. I mean, boy,
see, and
probably
that's
set
the
for
thing.
Life, right?
I mean, and that's the thing. There's no incentive.
Right. Right.
And when you don't have that incentive – you basically build laziness.
Yeah, yeah. Hmm.
I don't want to be lazy anymore. How about that?
I'm all for it.
Okay.
I'm all for it.
All right.
Yeah, I think taking charge and taking responsibility sounds like a good idea, you know?
Well, see, now, is that how you jumped?
Wow. I jumped and went back and jumped again several times over the years and, you know, for different reasons and different ways. But, you know, generally I just got tired of the kind of thing you're talking about and – wanted to do it the way I wanted to do it.
Same.
And, self-made. You know, to a greater or lesser extent, you know, I mean, that's the thing is even if you're not working in an office, if you're going to be, you know, freelance, you're going to have clients and there are crazy people everywhere, you know.
You're going to have that.
Yeah.
Yep.
And people that are difficult to work with and people who, you know, what have you, don't want to pay on time. All everything you could think of, you know?
Sometimes I wish I could be in charge. That, I mean, where I could have that kind of weight on me to say, okay, if I don't do this really well, if I don't manage this really well, it will fall apart.
Right. Right. Yeah, it's not easy to do. I mean, I have known some really great managers, but most of the ones that I've dealt with in my life have been mediocre at best, you know? It's not yeah. It's not an easy thing to manage people effectively.
That's I guess that's why they have all those conferences you can go to.
Yes, I'm sure that those help immensely.
Tony Robbins. Boom!
I love some Tony Robbins.
His jaw is just so big. That's the key to the whole thing. It's his mouth area. Everywhere, like just below his nose to his chin is, I think, don't quote me on this, but I think is actually bigger than the other side of his head from his nose to the top of his head. And there's something to that. And we're mesmerized by the ugliness.
Oh my. Here you go.
I had to reprogram the way I was thinking.
Tony Robbins.
He doesn't sound human either. Again, it has everything to do with the lower extremity of his head.
I enjoyed him in Shallow Hal. Yes, he was excellent.
Yes. Oh, speaking of movies.
Yes.
I'm going to give a shout out to Brett Terpstra, who turned me onto this one. A Boy and His Dog.
Sure. Uh-huh. Don Johnson.
I was perplexed in the first 3 minutes. Yeah, 3 minutes of the movie. Because of, well, obviously, Don Johnson can talk to his dog, telepathy. And
yes.
And his dog can talk to him as well. Which seems perfectly logical in after World War IV.
Yep. Yeah, it was based on a story by Harlan Ellison, excellent science fiction sort of futuristic writer.
So it very interesting movie. I was
1975. Oh, 75? Well, IMDb is saying 75.
Okay. So see, I was a year old when it came out. So it took me 39 years to get there.
Right. Yeah, I saw this when I was pretty young. I had an older brother, and he...
That's the only way you're going to see that movie is an older brother.
Right. And I believe he was a Harlan Ellison fan, you know.
Because there's a lot of booby in it.
It's true. And what young man would not like that?
Right. So it always takes the older brother to get you into those kind of movies.
Right. I am not seeing a credit for the dog here. All right.
It is in the movie.
Okay.
Like they have the voice of, but I don't know. I can't remember who did it.
Oh, Tim McIntyre.
Now, where we know him from?
I
nowhere.
Let's follow the
Wiki.
Not much. No, he's been in a lot of stuff. Not much that I know of here.
Yeah,
Gumball Rally. Oh yeah, there you go.
Interesting.
In several episodes of Kung Fu in the mid-70s. So there you go.
Okay, so he really hit his stride in the 70s, and that was about it.
Heck yeah.
So that was my interesting movie of the week, and then you got yours.
Yeah, Space People. I like Space People.
You know, I'm not into Star Trek.
No.
Okay. Well, I mean, I like it sort of, but...
Okay.
I mean, I grew up with it. I remember the weird, crazy the soundtrack used to kind of give me the creeps.
Sure.
For the old show.
Okay.
Especially though.
Love it.
And so, but I was blown away at the first one because it was a retelling of a story and basically ripping, you know, creating a time paradox,
right?
And being able to do parallel universes. So it's the best movie I've seen in a while.
It's really
strong.
And we're, of course, talking about Star Trek Into Darkness.
Right.
Yes.
Into Darkness. And then they changed the whole Khan thing. See, but there were some other things in there that if I was a real knee-deep into Star Trek, like I'd be way more into, like the whole Section 13 and that nonsense, or 31, something like that.
Right. Yeah, I'm not into it that deep, you know.
Right. But it's well shot. It's lens flare city, but it's good.
Well, I think you know, one of the keys is it's truly superbly cast.
I think so.
Just very good, very good.
Chris Pine, that guy plays a great Kirk. He has that little bit of what do you call it? The way the pacing of the Kirk speak.
Yep.
It's still there. It's not overt and it's not a caricature.
Right. Yep. It is Zachary Quinto, is that right?
Yeah.
I mean, wow.
I know. I mean, it's well cast all the way around. I did have a little bit of an issue with the movie.
How so?
Well, you know, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to go ahead and let it out. First of all,
let it out.
In Wrath of Khan, the original.
Yeah.
When Spock does himself in and, you know, closes off the reactor and dies.
Yep.
All right. I cry like a grandmother cries. And see, I'm not into it that much, but it's scenes like that. Like, if you showed me the scenes similar to that, like Iron Giant, I'll cry. Man on Fire, I'll get misty, but Iron Giant and Wrath of Khan, I will cry big time.
All right.
And so when they did that in this one, I really kind of wanted them to leave Kirk dead for the next one.
They had to go like they did in the old one, where they the next one is the search for Spock, where they go and find
him on the
Genesis planet, and he's all, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
You know, they play Amazing Grace, shoot him through the tube. Oh, I'll weep like a maniac, especially when they start Amazing Grace up and Scotty's on the bagpipes. Oh, waterworks.
Wow. Okay.
I will lose it. Huh. I will lose it.
Wow.
But
see, you know, to me, I hear where you're coming from, and I do love the Star Trek movies as well. But, you know, at that point when Spock's dead and they're shooting him off, and he's, you know, done the mind, he did the mind meld with the Bones before he died, and
yes,
everything, and they're shooting his dead body onto the Genesis planet. You know, to me, I was like, oh, okay, so next movie he's going to be alive. I gotcha. Okay. You know, to me it was just totally obvious and you know, thus sort of ruins the emotion of it.
Right. So
right.
Then the next scene after that is Kirk's in bed and awake. You know, it was after he got his right. blood transfusion, you know, Khan blood.
Right.
Special I don't know.
Yeah, that to me was that was a little bit sort of the weak point, you know, trying
now
to.
Was it that? That's what we call a cheat.
they really wanted to, you know, flip the story that way, you know, and they sort of wedged it in there a little bit. It was probably better before it got cut, you know, because I'm sure that there was a lot more footage of all that and it got cut down, you know.
Yeah. See, I think they should just make. Oh, speaking of which, I just heard about this. Apparently, the Blu-ray, depending on where you buy it, will have more or less special features.
Uh-huh.
Like, if between Target and Best Buy will have, I think they have the same, but Amazon and somebody else, they will have a completely either very limited or different set of special features.
Huh. And what do you generally get special feature wise if you you know, purchase from the iTunes store? Do you get any special features ever?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. Hmm.
I mean, I only know that for music, you know, where they're going to have, like, you know, the big PDF, or which I always think is kind of, I like liner notes, but I like paper liner notes. A PDF is just kind of, it just doesn't seem right.
Well, that's because, you know, you're an old man like me.
Right. But I don't know. There's just got to be a way to, you know, print the PDF out and on cardstock and let me read it.
Let me fondle it, yes.
Right.
Well, that was always fun. You know, you buy in recent years, you buy a CD and, you know, you slide that booklet out and thumb through.
That's right.
You know, yeah.
Or, you know, like in the case of like a Tool album, you get a whole set of eyeglasses that you can use to look at the album art with. That was amazing.
Nice. Yeah, you lose some of that in the whole digital delivery. You know,
you do, and it's gone. But I'll tell you, there are a lot of bands. Speaking of which, one of our favorites, the Pixies. Today,
yay,
released a 4-song EP. How? I don't know, but they did.
I have not actually purchased it yet, but it is on my list of things to get. That's pretty
cool. And you can get, what, the Apple Lossy for like $4?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
But they do have, you know, the rare goods where you can, I think you can get, it's like a pretty heavy duty vinyl copy.
Yep. Yep. They do have, they have several options. Yeah.
And maybe that's, you know,
they have an
if
option
you're really
with,
into it.
They have an option with a shirt, which is kind of interesting. You can get a T-shirt, limited edition.
Well, who wouldn't want T-shirts?
You know? Always,
I mean,
cool.
Really. Right. And the new Nine Inch Nails dropped today, so that's another one. Which is a way different album than I think people will... They'll be... they're going to either be really interested in it, or it's going to... They're not. It because it's a lot different from anything that I've heard from them.
Right. Well, I think that's good, you know?
Yeah. Be relevant. Yeah, well, because if you keep doing the same thing over and over, and see, there's another one. Trent Reznor has a whole thing. If you ordered the pre-release on iTunes, there's like a 40-minute interview where he's just talking about, you know, the state of Nine Inch Nails those kind of things are cool.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, well, that's what we'll see to help replace those liner notes is, you know, extra tracks of things like that and interactive apps like, you know, the Bjork stuff and, you know.
Yep.
It'll get more interesting over time, I think. You know.
Yep. We've covered a lot. We have gone the gamut.
I don't. Yeah, we'll have to see what this show sounds like. I don't know.
I think it's gonna sound great. Uh-oh. But we went from Apple invites to Pixies and meetings.
It's a long ways.
It is a long way. Yeah. Well, we got there.
Yeah, I really want to like that Sony lens thing. I really do, but I don't know.
Ugh. It's another thing to put in your pocket, and that's the problem.
Right.
And I have the same problem with the Olo clip.
Yeah.
Because I got to keep my pocket, and that's way smaller.
Well, you got to be like me. You got to carry a man purse. Come on, get with it. It's the 21st century, yo.
All right, I hear you.
Get you over to the Tom Bin website and get you a Ristretto. Yeah.
I just don't see me doing that. I like things in my pockets. I have since I was a kid. I'd have like at least 8 pockets, and 2 of them would be have 4 Matchbox cars in them.
See, and I'm the complete opposite. I to this day, and for many, many years, I cannot stand to have a wallet in my back pocket. It just, I don't understand how men go about their daily lives sitting down and such with this wallet on one side. It's insane.
See, mine's super thin. Mine's really thin, but I keep it in my front pocket, but I'm always. Like, I can't sit and drive. My spine will crack.
Okay.
It just doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
I'm completely out of alignment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then I have friends that have wallets that are like, I don't know, 3 inches deep.
Yeah.
And they sit on them. I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't. Yeah. I you know, maybe my wallet will be in my front pocket if I want to travel light. But most of the time, I got a little bag. You know.
I always keep in the front pocket. I don't want pickpockets.
Yeah.
So pickpockets.